to Piercing the Veil on bbsradio.com with your hosts Jordan and Corey and new guests appearing weekly. During the show, Jordan and Corey will pierce the many veils of illusion to reveal the universal truths and tools for negotiation inherent to success in one's daily life, including but not limited to 1. Multidimensional wordsmithing, 2. Mastering and commanding negotiations, 3. Constructive trust and wealth preservation, and 4. Spirituality. Pierce the veil, and the truth will reveal itself.
All right. Hello, world. Welcome back. It's another episode of Piercing the Veil. Today is April 17th, 2016. What we're going to talk about today is relationships, emotions, sex magic, things that we promised you last week. Last week, we also spoke about sustainable communities and their governance and using blockchain and other methods for recording and for instituting rules or constitutions, if you will. So that was a great show. We had Frank Bacon on. We intend to have him on in the next couple weeks or month, possibly. And Corey, welcome back, too. I realize that you're traveling. Thank you very much. Listeners, if you just joined us, we ran a few commercials in the intro. We were waiting on Corey, and he is in New York, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm here. I've made it to my destination. I'm ready. Looking forward to it.
Perfect, perfect. All right, and I said last week that we would take some callers. I don't know if anybody caught that, but if you do want to call in, we'll go ahead and stop the line of our topic that we're on, and we'll answer your question or speak with you briefly if you do have a short issue to bring up, or maybe just you know want to talk to us about something regarding relationships, emotions, or sex. And that call-in number would be 888-429-5471. It's toll-free. It's not going to cost you anything. If anybody's listening from Plague, guys, welcome back. Thank you very much. We really appreciate you coming over. We've been using that as a social media to try to get the world out into our space, into our dimension. You guys got to come out of your holes, okay? There's lots of us out there, Corey. There's lots of us there. And this, I believe, would be a good medium for us to continue doing what we're doing on a grander scale. So, again, anybody who found us through Plague, thank you so much. Continue sharing that and make yourself known in the world. And we'll just go ahead and proceed, Corey. Relationships are a tricky thing, my friend. I know that you've had some experience with that. I have as well. Pretty much anybody who's ever stepped out there with the opposite sex would have a story to tell. Generally, I think what we're going to try to do in the show today is just cover some main points through these different domains, if you will, and how to express a healthy balance. I want to do a lot of comparison and show some useful ways to operate versus dysfunctional, because I myself am not afraid to admit in front of the whole world that I've had some dysfunctional relationships myself and participated in some extremely dysfunctional things, and I had to do that in order to learn that there was a way to negotiate, there was a way to partner, to work together and cooperate as opposed to depend on or codepend. Does that make sense, Corey?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You got to trial by error sometimes.
Yeah. So if you will, I mean, I've got a few stories we could bring up in before we go into the relationships, but what's been your biggest struggle, if you're willing to share that? What's the biggest thing that you've run into time and time again, and something maybe you've adjusted and fixed as of now, perhaps?
It's interesting because I put a lot of energy into this lately. I'm in a relationship right now with someone, very special someone. It's going on over 3 years now. Yeah. And in navigating this relationship, I've got to meditate on past relationships, of course. And what I've come to realize is that in my case, and I think probably in most people's case, is that if there's any problem in a relationship, it's very easy to seek out any fault in the other person in the relationship. And basically what I've found for myself is that a lack of knowledge of myself has actually been the greatest obstacle to harmony in my interpersonal relationships, I would have to say. Not really knowing, not fully comprehending my own motivations, my own desires, my own goals, how I operate, how I communicate.
Would that boil down to full disclosure with yourself?
Full disclosure with self, man. I would have to say, in my experience, and I think with in all the other people who I know who've had relationship issues, it's about full disclosure with self, man. You know, from there, everything comes out. You might not be able to resolve those things with that particular person, but you'll definitely, you know, you'll definitely have a better sense of who you are and how you operate, and perhaps be in a better position to love more harmoniously the next time around.
That's right. Yeah, and then that speaks a lot into, you know, the taking versus a giving. I said we're going to do a lot of comparison. That's the first comparison I would make. And again, that's based on my personal experience. I've been on both sides of the coin. The latter is the one I prefer to be on because it does give and take. So by giving, I'm also receiving as well. I know that's in a lot of, you know, religious platitudes and this, and give of yourself and be in service to the world. I think we've addressed that before, Corey, the service issue. That's not what I'm talking about when I say taking versus giving. What I mean is energy, taking energy versus giving energy. Baby, I need you to talk to me. Baby, I need you to call me every day. I need you to text me. I need you to that. Rather than giving a space of, hey, I really enjoy speaking with you, and whenever you feel like doing it, go ahead and, you know, and here's how you can get a hold of me. Oh, I do prefer that you contact me from time to time or on this frequency, but if you don't, I'm not going to get upset at you. That's just my preferences, and they're adjustable. It's not one of my needs that are not adjustable at this time in my life. So again, that speaks to clear communication, which is a big thing that's missing that I see a lot. Not only have I experienced that, but that I see in everything. Not only the self aspect, but the communication aspect is missing. So that speaks to taking. Is this taking, almost this vampiric energetic between the partners. Does that make sense? And it could occur on either side at any given time. Or it could be occurring at the same time, which is an argument. Who's trying to take the right position, the position of power, so that they can be entitled to take more energy from the person tomorrow, whatever that shows up as. Oh, well, you were wrong last night, so you should drive me to the store, and, you know, I shouldn't have to drive my own car. You know, whatever it manifests in these little tiny little silly things that, again, sometimes revolve around money, right? A lot of fights come back to money.
A lot of them.
And the taking and the scarcity as opposed to the giving. Somebody who's in a giving mind state is not going to be worried about money to the degree that a taker is, to where they would exacerbate it and express that in a relationship in an unhealthy way. And again, there might be exceptions to every side of the coin.
I agree. But, on the giving and taking, sometimes there are people, I've probably been guilty of this myself, but I've also seen it in other people where some people set themselves up so much as givers, right?
Yes.
They're constantly giving. But it's unhealthy and unbalanced in a way. And what it actually represents is that they're really kind of takers, right? They set themselves up as martyrs. They set themselves up almost as victims, right? Where they're giving. But there's this expectation that, and they set themselves up and their partners up or their relationships up for failure, and that there's this expectation of receiving attached to their giving.
Okay? That's right.
So it's not giving freely. It's not giving for the sake of giving, knowing that the universe will return whatever gifts you offer. It's more mechanistic. It's more probably unconsciously intentional or manipulative in a way, where there's record keeping, there's accounting. I'm giving and giving and giving, and therefore you are obliged to return back to me. So that kind of energy is actually kind of, in my view, a taker energy that looks like a giver.
Absolutely. And so it's a shell. So now we're into form and substance. The form is a giver, but the substance is a taker. Inside, right. Substantively, they're taking. And, right. And again, you know, to receive the benefit. And the accounting that you brought up is real interesting, because if both of those people had sat down and said, hey, I want to be the giver for this time period, and what I really am doing is I'm taking. But if you're okay with me acting like I'm giving and taking, and you want to be, you know, the taker on the outside, but really what you're doing is you're giving me the opportunity to shift into balance, and you shift into balance, and everybody comes into the balance state, which again, you know, the harmony and balance of the universe is what everything's about. Well, then that works. If you sit down and you negotiate that, and at any given time, since you have knowledge of what's happening, one person can change and the other person, or give notice that they want to change the agreement. And at that point, the burden or the obligation becomes on the person who's had the notice and either has to counter negotiate or just pretend like they didn't get it. And again, that comes back to disclosure. So all that taking and giving creates this little bubble, or this sort of sense of entitlement almost, which I've experienced in relationships, like, oh, well, we're going together, we're sexually intimate, so I can do this to him, or I can disrespect him like that, or I can disrespect her like that, or vice versa. Does that make sense? I can say these things that I normally wouldn't say in society to somebody else because, oh, we're so close, I can't possibly hurt that person. I think there's some of that. You know what I'm describing, don't you?
Yeah, I'm giving you sex, so you're obliged to deal with my bullshit.
pretty much, and I'll, you know, it's sort of like a license to, you know, tread all over each other's emotions. I'm not saying everybody does this. I'm just saying this is a common trend or pattern that which I've experienced myself on both sides and have witnessed in other relationships. And as a tactical wordsmith, I'm constantly, I can't turn it off. It's almost a curse. I am constantly observing people's body language, their relationships between each other. When a couple sits down at the table, I can tell you without a doubt where they are in their relationship, what's going on. I might be wrong 10% of the time. 90% of the time, I'm right. And I've proven this before for myself. It's just, it's analysis. I can't help it. So I have seen these things, and I know you've done it too. You see it.
Mm-hmm.
It creates this bubble, dependency bubble, right? And if both people are balanced in their taking and giving, or they create the agreements or negotiate, then what you've got is a cooperation bubble. Now you've got two souls cooperating and helping each other in life and building each other up and building each other's energy and making a pact or a negotiation, sort of like a true unity or a marriage of energy or intent, conscious intent. So the dependency versus the cooperation is going to show up based upon the levels of taking and giving, whether those are disclosed fully. Right? You cannot treat a relationship like some special magical, you can, okay, I'm going to stop there. But if you want to succeed on the long term, you can't treat a relationship like some sort of magical exclusionary zone.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, the regular rules of life and disclosure and communication don't apply here. If I go up to a stranger and reach my hand in their pocket and take their credit card and go feed myself, you know, I'm probably either A, going to get my hand chopped off, B, going to get shot, or C, I might get arrested, or I, you know, D, I might actually get away with it, but that person doesn't know me from fucking Adam. They're not related to me in any way. I have no relationship with them. Who the fuck am I to be entitled to take their car and receive benefits from them? So it's like this, like I said, the entitlement factor. It's like this, oh, I can do this or I can do that. It's okay. That sort of develops, and you need to break that because that's going to start the dependency bubble. And it will just keep building and building and building.
Yeah, I've lived that, and I've seen that, the dependency or the codependency versus the cooperation. And as you said, it's, to me, it's very easy to see. I can definitely see couples who are in cooperation versus couples who are in codependency or what have you. It's like night and day.
That's right. That's right. And I'm blessed myself to recently have experienced a connection whereby I can see the contrast between, I've had cooperative relationships, few and far between. It's hard to find a conscious individual of my standards, and then also to be real with myself of, you know, where I'm really at. Does it make sense? That was hard for me at that time. So I had a few and far between, but right now I'm blessed to have one that's completely matched and cooperative. as opposed to dependent. Space is given, everything's fully disclosed, terms, all sorts of different things. And I want to talk about the source and then the results, right? We've talked about the taking and giving and then the bubbles that it creates. So we've got the taking and giving, which are the actions, and we've got the semi-results or the form results, which is the dependency bubble that shows up in a relationship or cooperation. The bubble being analogous to, you know, like a sphere of influence in the relationship that people can pick up when they observe them. Does that make sense? Uh-huh. So the source of the taking and giving, which leads to the form result, which is dependency and cooperation, is coddling and a fear of loss, right? Or this absence of it. So this total lack of regard for one's feelings, or the total coddling of somebody else's feelings, depending if you're taking or giving. Does it make sense? The giving is coddling. It's enabling. The taking is this absence, this withholding, withdrawing. And both of them are from a fear of loss. If I give too much, they're going to get tired of me. They're going to get bored, and I'm going to lose them. If I don't give enough, they're going to get tired of me. They're going to get bored of me. I'm going to lose them. Fear of loss.
Right.
And then that ties back into what you're saying, Corey, which is the self aspect.
And authenticity.
That's right. That's the result of a cooperative and a self-empowered partner, and both partners, if they're that way, you get the authentic mutual empowerment and the building of the cooperative relationship.
And also, too, let me clarify. Most relationships, including my experiences, and even to an extent the one that I'm in now, are somewhere between the two extremes.
Right. Good. Thank you for that.
And cooperation. You know, if you're in a committed relationship, the idea, in my view and in my experience and what I'm living, is the movement towards that cooperation and the authenticity and the mutual empowerment. You know, yes, the dependency is there. The controlling aspects and the fear of loss and stuff, that stuff is there. And that's okay, because that's fundamentally human. It's moving towards one, away from one extreme and towards another extreme, which
you
in
find,
my view,
yeah,
the goal, you know. And
find
it's my
the
practice.
Point of balance.
Right.
That's right. Well, and what I think you're describing as well is, again, we need to look at the fact that just the core source of everything that I believe is the universe is everything, it's nothing, it's something. Everything can be construed and considered as something, nothing, or, you know, everything, depending on your point of view, your perception, your conscious point, right? Your focus, your focal point. So if your focal point and your experience and your intent and your disclosure and your communication with your partner is that of a nature that includes you talking about your dependencies. Well, hey, right, this is intrinsic to our relationship, and it's okay if we both recognize it and don't make it more than it is, that we're dependent on each other for this, you know, you to pay this bill this month and I pay this bill, or I help you drive you here, or this or that. That's cooperative dependency. And so at the same time, it's everything, nothing, and something, and it would be considered specifically a hybrid. And because the hybrid is predominant on the cooperative side, it can be considered useful as opposed to not useful when speaking in a long-term sustainable sense. So I agree on a personal level, that yes, I experience what you're talking about with the dependency factors, but I analyze and have the intent behind them as what I've just described to our listeners, and my partner is aware of this as well and agrees to operate in that capacity. Yeah, we operate intentionally dependent in some realms, in some little tiny aspects of our relationship.
Right. Yeah, and it's like, I don't know, the you've heard of the seven hermetic principles.
Yes. Yeah.
That come to mind. The principle of that basically everything in the universe, all sentient and inanimate and inanimate objects, all phenomena in the universe, there's essentially seven basic principles. There's the principle of mentalism, correspondence, vibration, polarity, rhythm, cause and effect, and gender. And nowhere, in my view, are those principles manifest more so than interpersonal relationships, and in particular, intimate relationships.
Agreed. Right?
So you've got this, you know, whether you're same sex or whether you're hetero, you know, there's the principle of gender. There is the masculine principle and the feminine principle. There's the passive, active, you know, which people, regardless of their actual gender or whatever role they happen to be playing in the relationship, those roles can change and shift, right? There's cause and effect. Cause and effect. If I create something in a relationship, I'm going to get an effect from it. And that goes back to, you know, being mindful of how one operates in a relationship, because everything that you do in a relationship is going to generate some kind of effect, for better or for worse, you know?
Absolutely.
There's rhythm. That's a big one, right? Individuals have a certain rhythm about how they go about their days and their life, and when you share that with something, you get into a rhythm.
A shared rhythm.
And that rhythm can be constructive, positive, beneficial, or it can be otherwise detrimental. You know?
Yeah, and I totally agree.
Yeah, and so on with the other principles, you know, vibration. You know, what you're thinking, what you're feeling, your partner is going to pick up on that regardless of what you say at some point, you know.
Agreed.
And correspondence and mentalism, you know, what are you thinking? You know, communicate what you are thinking and what you are feeling in a relationship. You know, you can say, I'm feeling this. Right? Let's say you're having something's coming across and you're not really, you know, you're not really feeling too positive about what it is. You can't say, you know, you can say, you always do this and start an argument. Or you could say, right now in this moment, I am feeling this. Okay? That way you're putting it out there. You're not putting blame on the other person. You're open to accepting your responsibility for what you happen to be feeling, and you put it out there in a way that can be addressed by both
exactly.
parties.
A personal qualifier or conditioner is what you've just used, is this
right
now the way I'm feeling. It's sort of like in court, you know, our qualifier. Well, as we stand here today, except it's less, you know, less formal. So it's perfect, and that's expressing clearly how you feel. And it's the other person's responsibility to react to your feeling in a way that is useful for them. However that shows up, if they get pissy or if they get mad, if they get sad, it's not good or bad. If it's useful, great. That person felt that emotion. They learned a lesson, however small or unconscious. It's in their, you know, their subconscious bank now or their conscious mind. Wonderful. How that made them feel triggered and registered their perceptions and shifted them a little bit, or it didn't do anything at all, so it's not useful. But again, it's either useful or not useful. And as long as you're bringing your feeling and presenting it on the table in a respectful – it doesn't even have to be respectful – in a genuine or authentic way that – perhaps if you have knowledge that the other person has certain sensitivities, if you don't condition it, it could be construed that you're taking advantage by just, you know, just being overly authentic and being angry or whatever, right?
Attack.
There is a duty. There is a duty on your part to sort of condition and soften, or whatever the case may be, or harden if you're female, whatever, and be very clear, but at the same time not intentionally harm somebody with the way you're bringing it. And as long as you've fulfilled that duty to be very clear and authentic to a certain extent, you know, exceptions excluded, then it's the other person's duty and responsibility about how they feel. It is not your responsibility. If I had to go save every single person for how they felt after I was done talking to them, I mean, I'm not even going to finish that sentence, Corey. Like, oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, so, there's another thing too. It's like there's two things that or two phrases that are common to this situation. One is, it's not the message, it's how the message is delivered. There's some truth to that. Okay,
yes.
I agree with that. On the other hand, there is also, regardless of how that message is brought to you, right, one would do well to extract the truth out of that message. right? So even if someone is haranguing you as being an asshole towards you, what's really causing it? What is that person really saying?
That's right. Because they're not expressing clearly. They're just, at that point, Corey, they're just like, hey, let's use an appropriate and pertinent analogy. I've done this myself, and I don't do this anymore. And if I do, my partner, you know, will catch it. But ejaculating unconsciously, your emotions, like, that's literally what you're doing. You can't put that back in the bottle when you're done. Yet you're ejaculating your emotion onto the person. You brought this up, and remember, you did this and you did that. So.
Right. Right, and you're right. You're busting a nut of emotion because you haven't come to terms with what you're really feeling, right? And you haven't expressed it. This is what I'm feeling versus you're doing this.
That's right.
Yeah.
And a lot of that, you know, there might be. You did touch on this. I'm glad you did. There might be some unspoken or uncommunicated things that might just manifest themselves out of, you know, the law of attraction, the law of necessity. It just has to at some point come out, and consciousness plays a big role in that. What I mean is, people that are intrapersonally or very close connected sometimes experience telepathic tendencies. I don't mean, you know, it is possible, yes, they can read each other's thoughts and minds and communicate, you know, non-verbally using specific concepts, but I'm talking about little feelings, or, you know, turning the air conditioner on before your partner asked, or turning the radio to a different station, these types of little things. And when you get to that level, the emotions also come into play. So if somebody's feeling something and is not expressing it, and they're hiding it and acting a different way, even though you're close with each other and have agreed to be honest, there's going to be some sort of resentment on a soul level that you're picking up. And if you're conscious of it, then you can say, hey, I think you're hiding something. Why don't you just be honest with me? If you're not conscious, then the ejaculating comes of you're doing this, you're doing that.
Yeah, correspondence and vibration. And really, you know, in these times that we're living in, there are no secrets.
That's right.
You know, we're in a time of quickening, and you spoke about telepathy and those kinds of things. You know, I've had the experience where, you know, women who I've been close to, and including in this relationship, where, you know, at bedtime, you know, just as we're going into sleep mode, I can have conversations with this person without speaking. And clearly they respond.
Likewise.
Right? Now, they're not conscious of it. Like, and I wake up in the next morning, hey, do you remember that conversation, the telepathic conversation we had as we were moving into sleep? No, that doesn't happen. But clearly there are reactions there to my thoughts that are going into the ether that are directed at my partner, where there are definitive responses to it, nonverbal responses that I can clearly make out. So based on what I'm thinking, based on what I'm emoting, I have clearly recognized that my partner picks that up and responds to it in some way or another. So again, I would advise people, you know, it's the amazing thing about, to me, about Christ's message, for example, right? If you think of committing a sin, then you've committed the sin. And basically what he was trying to show people through his gospel was that, look, man, your mind is powerful. You know, what you think is going to cause reverberations out in the world, even before or whether you act on your thoughts or not, right? So I think he was trying to express that. He's trying to raise the bar on people's understanding a little bit. And so to your point, if you have a soul connection with somebody, you know, words are not necessarily. And so, yeah, your partner's going to pick up on some funny vibes that you're having, and vice versa.
That's right. And it's not all bad. It's good. You'll have, you know, if you're on this level, you'll have a wonderful experience. And, you know, currently with my partner, I have sort of the same thing that happened. It's funny you brought up the sleep aspect to this, Corey, because of what we've already talked about, where you go and you leave your body and you do adventures and things like this. I myself, I believe, am an extremely busy individual when I go to sleep because I rarely dream, or my brain rarely processes anything. It's almost as if I'm got like this top secret folder on myself and I can't see it while I'm in the body. So take that for what you will. But the confirmation of this lies in my partner, wherein I was awake and she was asleep. Her name's Amy, and she was sleeping. And she is very, very connected to her dreams. So she's very like, I remember them. I remember every detail. I know what's going on. I have them constantly every night. And she dreams about me. And so when I'm in her dreams, I'm very much the same likeness, the same tone, the same temper, the very matter of fact, you know, hey, baby, you can big spoon me, but I'm busy. I'm going to have to leave soon. Something like that, you know, silly stuff like that. Right. So then she wakes up. And I'm working, and I'm like, hey, babe, you know, you want to spoon a little bit, we can, but I'm busy. I'm going to have to, you know, get up and do something. And literally, she had just dreamed that and heard me say that to her. So right. Out of the body, time is and boundaries are crossed, okay? Right. And so there absolutely is a connection. And having that experience, which is very pleasant, that was just enjoyable that she told me that she dreamed that and woke up, and then that's what I said. And then, you know what I mean? So...
It's yeah, just, man. I it's mean, a beautiful thing. Yeah, tell the truth. Tell the truth. Always tell the truth. Always tell the truth.
Yeah, and it's the non-communication, Corey. There's a money aspect, okay, that leads to this sort of this zone of fighting all the time, and that energy brings in a lot of outside entities in most cases. Mm-hmm. And then once that's not enough, once the energy's not enough, then the emotions can sometimes be exacerbated to a level where something bad happens or something violent happens, you know. And you've heard stories of like succubus, like succubi,
right?
A possession of a female or a male or whatever, to the point where they're sucking all the energy of the other partner and then ruining their life. And I've actually encountered partners like this where they'll do anything they can to their own detriment, to their family's detriment, to make you hurt, to make you suffer, to spite you. And it's out of their own suffering, and it's a possession, I really believe. It's some sort of possession. You know, and you've got stuff like, you know, domestic violence and murder of, you know, spousal murder and the heat of passion crimes, which are basically a legal defense now. It's tied in with temporary insanity where, you know, and somebody witnesses something that just enrages them so much in the moment that they just lose it and snap. Just, you know, bam. So generally that's catching another partner in bed. But again, if you haven't been disclosing or being fully honest, then you're not going to know what leads to that type of stuff. I'm not saying that there's one reason for a man or a woman to cheat. I'm saying there's multiple different reasons. It's varied, but there's some predominant ones. Physical connection not being there, lack of emotional attention, so on and so forth. So it can rise to the level of the nastiness unless you cut it off and just nip it in the bud.
Yeah, I mean, I get where you're coming from on the crime of passion thing. I'm a pretty passionate guy. I'm, you know, if you're into astrology, I'm an Aries, so you know, I like going to war. I love to fight. That's part of my nature, and so I get to really work on that in terms of my relationships with people. And typically what I find is if I get to a point where all of a sudden this emotion, this anger, if you will, is welling up in me at a particular time towards a particular individual, I can only assume that it's due to something that I have not brought up previously. It's something that has been there for a while that I have snuffed or buried, right? Maybe because I didn't want to cause a controversy.
That's right.
You know, but you know, eventually stuff's going to bubble up, right? So again, that communication, being in touch with one's, knowing oneself, knowing how you operate, knowing your buttons, you know, knowing your own foibles, your strengths, weaknesses, it's only going to benefit one in a relationship to be able to create harmony, you know. And the bottling up of things and the letting things pass or whatever, you know, I came upon this concept recently about enemies, right? What is an enemy? Some would say our greatest enemy are ourselves. Okay, yeah, that's true. We've heard that before. And we've heard that our greatest enemy is fear, right? There's nothing to fear but fear itself. And I would agree with that as well. But I came across the definition of an enemy probably within the last month or so, which is basically along these lines, and that is the people who are closest to us, our friends, our family, our lovers, our spouses, our children, our parents, who do not express their concerns or do not express the truth as they see it with regards to us, right? And then allow us to allow things to just continue unaddressed. Those are our enemies.
Right? I would agree to an extent. Personally, my extent extends, you know, double entendre. My extent extends to my personal sphere, but my objection is this. I have no enemies, Corey. I have no enemies. I have no rivals. And I know that you can get kitschy with that and say, oh, love thy enemy and turn the other cheek. That's not where I'm going. What I mean is, if anyone were to do me harm in any way whatsoever, I have a program set up for my soul that I've consciously intended and quantum entangled with anybody else or any other thing. If anyone is to do me any physical harm, emotional harm, anything, in the end, it will benefit my soul and my energy, my progeny, any persons that are connected to me, any of my partners, all of the energy of that person to the extent that is able to be given will be given out of the body. What I mean by that is they'll be indebted to me for hundreds of thousands of years out of the body. You know what I mean? So I'm okay. Am I okay with being assassinated, tortured, blah, blah, blah? Not necessarily, and I'm not manifesting that. I don't want that. Am I okay with being treated shitty in a relationship? No. But I have no enemies. Every single person will benefit me and raise me to a higher level or give me more energy so that when I do leave this body, I can conduct my business and do what I need to do on a grander scale with more worker bees, whatever, that are contracted me for a long extension or long period of time. No matter what type of entity it is or how powerful it is, it's an agreement. Everything's based on agreements, and I connect with the source to back that up and enforce it. So I would say
that responsibility. Yeah, that's responsibility for self. You know, no matter what happens to me in my life, in my journey, right?
That's right.
I'm responsible for making the best of it, making the most of it, learning from it, utilizing it. To the best possible outcome. You know, and again, you know, it's like, you know, we're dealing with these concepts, you know, as you said, cliches and things that people throw out there and stuff like that. And a lot of that stuff is kind of half truths, you know. Are there any enemies? No. Ultimately, there's no enemies, right?
However, if it works for you to define them as such, and it did work in that example for you and most people, I would imagine. I was just bringing it up for me personally, but I think you were onto something there. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if it's the people who are, I mean, we're open, we are vulnerable, we allow ourselves, you know, if it's someone we don't know, if it's someone who we have an adversarial relationship with, we're going to protect ourselves from them, right? If it's someone who's close to us, who knows us, and who we trust, right? And if they withhold something from us, maybe because they don't want to cause a controversy, but in that withholding, they could possibly be doing us harm, you know? It's like spoiling a child.
That's right.
You know, you let your child get away with too much shit, right? Because you don't want to do them any harm, right? You might be doing them harm by not alerting them to certain things about themselves or alerting them to how their behavior is affecting you or adequately communicating them that could benefit them.
That happens all over the place, Corey. And these hooks and these cords of emotion and these ties and these resentments and these unsaid things, all of these, whether the person being hooked and resented knows it or not consciously, are being embedded, for lack of a better term, just right in there in their emotional body. And learning how to scan your body and removing these without feeling guilty is really the key, because then you can operate in your full capacity with whoever has hooked you and negotiate clearly on your terms, as opposed to, well, they did hook me, but they need this, and I have this, they're my sister, or they're my mom, or my lover, or whatever the case may be, or my dad, or my grandpa, you know, whatever your relationship, that hook does not justify, or the relationship doesn't justify that being there. Does it make sense? So releasing it without guilt is extremely important skill to learn, and just cutting the ties out of your body is going to empower the other person, not hurt them. Just like the coddling fear of loss versus mutual empowerment thing we talked about earlier. So
they might feel discomfort at not having that manipulation anymore. Right? They're not right. Damn, I can't. You know, it's like I remember the last spanking that I got from my mom, for example. Right? Which was, I don't know, I might have been 9 years old or something. I didn't cry. It had no effect.
Yep.
Right? And that was the last time. It was like, well, I can't use that.
Energetically, it was done.
Yeah, I can't use that as a means to influence this person anymore. I guess I got to come from another angle.
So right. You cut the cord. That's perfect.
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah, it just goes so deep. It really does, listeners. You just got to analyze yourself, and are you really being fully honest and disclosing not only with yourself but with partners and relationships and so on and so forth. And we're going to talk about partners. First, we're going to go to commercial, and when we get back, we're going to talk about the different types of sexualities and the root causes that I believe really make those prevalent. So, you know, bisexual or homosexual or heterosexual, these are just, and there's all sorts of different things, asexual. We won't go into all of them, but I do just want to touch briefly on that before we get into the actual topic of sex. And then once we've touched on sex, if we have time, we're going to talk about sex magic and a few rituals. Again, I just want to explain, what the fuck is magic for anybody who's asking that question? I believe, you know, I'm not in the airy-fairy stuff. I believe it's an extension of conscious creativity, and it's not necessarily reliant upon the rules of physics or time-space that we're familiar with. Just in the same way that a dream can seem as if it lasted for years, and you wake up and you've only been asleep for 15 minutes. Does it make sense? So that's what I mean by when I say magic and rituals. I'm not into, you know, any of these dark magic things or any of these things that are going on. But we do want to touch a little bit on this so that you can do this in your personal life, whether by yourself or with a partner. So we're going to talk about partners. We're going to talk about sex and sex magic when we come back from commercial, and we'll see you when we get back.
Having trouble with harassing collection agencies? Creditors breathing down your neck? Feeling like you're drowning in debt? The Guild of Tactical Wordsmiths is here to help you now. GTAC is an ecclesiastical guild association of aggressive debt assassins who can eliminate your debts, free negative marks from your credit report, and get you compensated for unfair collection practices or emotional damages. They have a proven track record of success and sustainable results, which will have creditors and debt collectors shaking in their boots. This is not your typical credit repair or verification. GTAC uses proven techniques and negotiation tactics to completely eliminate your debt or conflict, remove negative marks from your credit reports, and in most cases, GTAC will retrieve compensation for you. Call for your free 15-minute consultation today at 214-290-3053.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for your patience. We had another brand new commercial we're going to put on there, and it ran for just a half a second, and it was replaced by our original one. So thank you for that. That's what's going on. So if you're just listening, we are talking about relationships, emotions, partners, sex magic, sex rituals, and sex itself. That's what we're coming back into. We've already touched on the emotional aspect, the relationship
dynamics, if you will, whether that's useful or not useful. And now we're going to get into the physical component, which I think is important for a lot of people. It may not be important for some people, and it might be taboo for others, but hey, guess what? If you don't like it, sorry, find a different show. We're going to talk about real things. So getting into that, sex, the sexual relationships that are made in the physical world are also a component that are contained within the non-physical world. Okay, so what I mean by that is you have sex when you're out of the body, when you're leaving the body, when you're gone during dream time or when you're sleeping and dreaming. Some of those sex dreams you've had might have been a real experience. And it's not, oh, I'm married to you now. Oh, I'm cheating on my partner in the physical realm or any of this. That could have been your partner in a different face, or it could have been a different part of them, or one of their people that needed some energy. I believe that sex outside the body is just an exchange or a building of mutual energy where karma and interpersonal karma is not entwined in any way, and it's just an exchange between the two souls and they move on. Okay? And I believe that physically sex is so taboo because of how powerful it is if there's no conditioning or shame attached to it. If the person who's actually doing the act is there's no condition or shame. See, think of an animal, for example, Corey. How is instinctual information from thousands of lineages previous, shall we say, how is that conveyed fully? Well, it's conveyed through DNA, through the sex act, through copulation, reproduction, this instinct to reproduce. But the other instincts of how to hunt, how to survive, what animals are dangerous to you as a, you know, what should we say, a wallaby or whatever, or an alligator on the predator side. So all of these things are transferred through DNA and through some form of sex, whether that's a fertilizing of an egg, what have you. Now look at humans. I don't remember all my predecessors. I don't remember, you know, all of these things. Do you understand? I don't remember all that stuff. I have certain instincts, but they're very muddled. And different people have different instincts. It's not like a human instinct. I know certain people have basic things and basic bodily functions. Their body saves themselves from falling or tripping, stuff like that that's ingrained in the mechanics or the hardware or the meat suit, if you will. I mean non-physical instincts. So what I believe in my theory is because animals are not burdened with conditioning or shame, they're transmitting fully all of the information and they're receiving fully all of the information. Does that make sense? Totally awesome power for creation. That is why sex is taboo and is only used by the highest in power and usually in dark ways, the actual rituals and sexual things that have been transferred down through the ages that are instinctual. Again, I think there's some positive groups and pagans and, you know, people like this that have been doing these. I don't subscribe to any certain religion or anything, but I have seen both sides of the coin. And again, the condition and shame being gone and removed from the equation is what I believe to be so important for the total expression. Does that make sense? Go ahead.
There's rules as well, or there may be rules, you know. Some people, you know, I'm not being judgmental one way or another, but, you know, there's a lot of very materialistic sexual activity as well, if you will, for lack of a better terminology. There's a lot of kind of
surface attraction. Yeah.
Selfish, materialistic, sensorial, strictly physical, you know, there's a lot of that going on as well, too.
That's true.
To your point, and, you know, we might even have to go on this on a separate show, but like...
It's possible.
If you look at the taboos that have been created around sex, typically by organized religion, and then you look deeper into like behind the scenes of what these practitioners or the leadership or the insiders of these religions, and if you look at the symbology, right, if you look in the books, in the holy books, and the symbology and the symbols used by the Vatican and the symbols
it's all
used
sex.
All of that stuff they're showing you how powerful the sex act is.
Is, exactly.
Duality is. And the people, I believe the people in power who have a lot of, who've amassed a lot of power on this earth are very much aware of the power of the sex act. And for better or for good or for not good.
Agreed. And you know,
knowledge been kept from most people.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's all kept. It's the most powerful secret for creative force. And it spans, like we said, we'll talk about partners. It spans different sexes or not sexes, but genders, shall we say, and different types of sexualities and their gender expressions. You know, just to touch on that for a second, I believe that the root of sexual preference is determined or predetermined to a certain degree. Obviously, there's always renegotiations and exceptions to a certain degree by the predominance of the soul energy that's contained inside the body and then between the partners. So is that energy inside that body, is it male dominant or feminine dominant? And then is it in a female body or a male body?
Correct.
Or is it perfectly balanced or close to such a balance? And then it could choose either the male or the female body to express itself in this lifetime. And that might be like an asexual or bisexual, whatever. Transgender is somebody who I would imagine, I can't speak for them, but somebody who has made the physical choice to express what they're really predominant on the inside, right? And that just, that seems logical. And then, you know, so now we go back to sex, and no matter who it is or what partner is doing it or what partners, the sex act is still creative force. So that spans everything. Do you do what you want? And, you know, it is what it is. So now, what about fantasies? You know, like people have different kinks, if you will call them that, or fantasies. You can create a dimension and talk with your partner before you role play these things or actually enact them in such a way that you could create this sort of this dimension that's only used for fantasy. And it's by itself, and it's self-contained. It's like a little bubble, whatever. You do your thing, and then when you're out, it doesn't permeate into your real life unless you want it to, or only to the extent that you want it to. Because let's be honest, if you eat chocolate every fucking day for a month, you're going to get tired of chocolate. I don't care who you are, okay? So keeping it, keeping it fresh and exciting is great. Doing mutual masturbations, exchanging sensual touch, massage, maybe cheek snuggling or lion kisses, like I call them, where you rub your faces together, you know, or things like that. And maybe having a healthy mix of intimacy with security. Like a lot of females are seeking security, in my experience. A lot of males are seeking reassurance of masculinity or like the feminine to balance them or cool down their fire, in my case. Right, to cool down the fire. So we're going to have to do another show about this, it looks like.
Definitely.
It's not
going to
be next week, but, you know, I want to move into sexual happiness, like fulfillment as a core component of relationships, okay? Now, we've touched a little bit on what sex is and the act of it, but how to make that work in the relationship would be a good topic for the next show. And I also want to incorporate some call-ins because I said we were going to do that and we didn't have any call-ins today, which is just perfectly fine. But we'll incorporate that as well. So what we're going to do next week, though, and I think we're going to be super excited about this, to actually talk about this. Corey, what we're going to do next week is homelessness and the prevalence or rise of mental illness and the conditions of the body as a component of mental illness and stress. So if and solutions, not only for the homelessness problem, but temporary solutions for reconditioning or rehabilitating or unconditioning, shall we say, someone who's lived like that or been exposed to that for a long period of time. I know you guys have a lot of that out in Arizona, so I knew you would like this. We have a lot of it in DFW. We do a lot of homeless feeds with some of our partners, like the Garden of Eden, stuff like that. Well, I participated, I should say. But I'm also looking at doing some of those things for GTAC because I feel it's so important. So that's what I want to touch on next week. Listeners, we really appreciate you staying with us and learning new things every week. I know that we cover a lot of topics, a lot of broad dimensions, but that's what we've given you notice of. When we first started this show, we're going to cover all aspects of life and see what we can reveal and what veils we can pierce. Okay. So until next week, thank you, Corey. I appreciate your time, man. You're always on point with everything, even when you're riding the subway in the middle of downtown New York, New York.
Right on. It's all pleasure, man. You know that.
Perfect. I want to thank everybody who's listening. Plag listeners, you're awesome. We're going to continue plagging to you. We had a little bit of a hiccup. Our account got deleted for spamming. I don't know if that was unintentional or intentional. I'll have to double check and investigate into that. But we'll see you next week. It's going to be about homelessness and the prevalence and prevention of mental illness. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful life. See you then.